I can honestly say that is the first time I have ever been sung to before I started sharing, so. Yes! very cool. Well, that makes me sound much better than I probably actually am, but thank you, Greta. It's interesting. I sort of fell into this ICCM ambassador position, going around and sharing, and I also sort of fell into directing Mission Catalyst, and I also sort of fell into being a pastor. That was totally on accident. There's a whole story to that you can ask me sometime, but really it's because I'm a horrible secretary. And really what it does boil down to is the last part about what Greta was saying. Like, I love God, and I love watching God stretch and open people, both myself and the people around me. That is why we started doing short-term mission trips, because there is very few things that stretch and open people's eyes, like putting them in an entirely different culture where they don't know the rules and they don't know what's going on, and they see God being loved by people in a different way and see people that need him in ways that they haven't experienced before, and it just blows their mind. And sort of chasing that led to a lot of the things that I do. And so I hope by the end of today to in some small way give you a bit more of that. I hope that when I leave today you go, I hadn't thought of that. Oh, maybe God's wanting me to do something different. Maybe God's stretching me in a new way. And that's really my hope. One of the verses that really challenged me, and I'll go ahead and put this up here. It's Matthew 5:23-24. So if you were presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. Then come and offer your sacrifice to God. Now, I think we oftentimes think about this verse in regard to being offended, right? Like you said something bad to somebody, or you hurt them, or you, I don't know, got mad at your wife on the way and yelled at her and you need to go make amends, or, you know, whatever. But I think there's a much bigger piece to this verse, in that there are people all over the place that maybe have something against us. It could be poor people around us that we ignore. It could be the homeless person on the corner that we just sort of are annoyed that they're there. It could be somebody in another country around the world that looks at Americans and says, you have so much and I have so little, why? There's a million people out there, well, probably billions, that could have something against us. And we don't earn bonus points from coming to church when we get to heaven. God doesn't go, oh, I am so glad you came 3 out of 4 Sundays a month for the majority of your life and kept that chair warm. Kudos. Right? In fact, other than gathering together, nowhere are we told to come to church in the Bible. We are told to love. We are told to reach out to people. We are told to help those. We are told to go. And so if out of this talk, there's a part of it that you go, oh, maybe somebody out there has something against me, my challenge to you would be, go and do that. We're gonna talk a little bit about the poor today, and I'm gonna put it in context of seasons of love. I've been pondering on this idea of Advent and love in regard to Jesus, and sort of his growing up. And really, I think we see three aspects of the way Jesus interacted with love in the Bible, and it applies to us also. Right? He's born as an infant and grows up as a child. And as a child, we just simply take love. We receive it. Right? Nobody expects your three-year-old to figure out how to cook dinner for the family. It might be cute to watch them try and then clean up the mess later, but there's this sense of infants and children accept and receive love. And then there's this period of where I think, and the Bible doesn't talk about it, but this period of sort of that adolescent, young, adult age where you're part of a family and you both give and receive love. I would assume that you expect your 14-year-old to do some dishes or laundry or give gifts to your children or give gifts on Christmas and to the other kids and clean up after that. There's some give and take. They receive and they give. And then there's this place where Jesus walked into his ministry and his whole life became about giving out. Right? And that's what it means to be an adult. Those seasons of love change from the time where you just receive to the time where you interact and share to the time where you give. And I would add, because I know Carlene well, and I know Ted, that those seasons change. Carlene is at a place now where she is back as a child receiving love. And that season changed from 6 months ago when she was just giving. And so these seasons aren't solid. They change at different times in different places. But hopefully you get that the idea is to keep growing up, right? I mean, if Carlene spends the rest of her life just receiving love and not giving out, that would be really unhealthy. But it's also okay for her to step back and say, I'm really hurting, I need to be loved now. So we're going to talk about that. But what I want to challenge us as the church in America is to realize that we are at a place where we should really be loving the world more than we are. The church in America, if I can say this, is very often much more like children and maybe adolescents than they are adults in faith. And I think that makes God sad. Deuteronomy 10. This is a command and a definition of who God is in the same time. He, God, defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow, and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. God starts off with this call for people who love him and follow him to be the ones who give out. I'll tell you, I pastored for 9 years before we moved to Tri-Cities and been there about 6 months now. The vast majority of conversations I had with people in the church were about themselves and about our church. They didn't like that thing. They were frustrated with this person. They were really upset that that table got put in that place. How dare they do that with the building? What about... It was all about them. And that's not specific to any particular church. I think the vast majority of the time, us in the U.S., focus on what kind of love and attention we are receiving. But see, here's the secret. your faith is not about you. It was never, ever meant to be. From the beginning of the Bible to the end, the goal is to grow up from being a child to being the adult that gives out. If you hit 70 years old and you're in church and you're ticked off about the style of music, grow up. If you are 30 years old and you're in church and you're ticked off about the style of music, grow up. Your faith is not supposed to be about you. We are called to grow into loving others. And I'll tell you, missions is one of the things that has most struck me about this. We so often don't realize how good we have it. A year and a half ago, I had the opportunity to go to Kurdistan in Iraq and work with refugees. And it was startling. So let me give you a little bit of an idea to think about this. If tomorrow morning Beaverton got ticked off at all y'all and decided Hillsborough needed to be attacked, probably most of you don't own guns at home, so you'd be pretty easy targets. Go to her house. I did this in Wilhelmina, and they were all like, we all got guns. I'm like, all right, so you're probably okay. But if Beaverton decided to invade and all of a sudden started raining rockets and bombs and marching troops through the streets shooting whoever was around in Hillsborough, you would run to your home, grab your kids, your family, whatever, throw whatever you had in your car, and take off running. And you probably have family or friends somewhere, I don't know, you'd go to California, or you'd go to Canada, or you'd go somewhere. And who would you be? You would be a refugee. And you would show up in whatever town, and you wouldn't have a job anymore, and you wouldn't have a home, and you wouldn't have any food, and you wouldn't have any income. Hopefully you have a little money in the bank, maybe a credit card. But if you didn't have that, you would be on the street corner looking for handouts to get food. Show you the first picture here. So these are some pictures I took of some Yazidi people when I was in Kurdistan. And this was a refugee area that they had set up. By the way, everybody thinks about Iraq being really warm, but it's high desert. And so this was February and it was snowing. I'll go ahead and click forward. Their source of heat, we were giving out food and clothing and oil and kerosene because they heat everything with kerosene lanterns there. Next picture. And this is what one of their typical homes look like. This young, well, she was a daughter and her little brother. But this is kind of what they lived in. Next one. This was a family that I had the chance to go talk to. And interestingly, if you can see the two babies there, there's the daughter on the far left, and then the mother is second from the right there holding babies. Go to the next picture. They were born in that room 36 hours before I got there. The mother gave birth to those twin babies. And we'll go ahead and leave that picture up there for a sec. This man was the leader of his village before they got invaded. And it was hard speaking through an interpreter, so I didn't get what he did before. But talking to the Yazidi people in this area, there was a banker, there was a taxi cab driver, there was somebody who had done sales of some kind. These were you, people, that ISIS rose up and started blowing stuff up and killing them, and they fled. You know, Luke chapter 2, starting in verse 6 and 7, says that the time for Mary to give birth came about while they were in Bethlehem, having been forced by the occupiers to go there from Nazareth. And she gave birth, and she wrapped the baby in swaddling clothes, and she laid him in a manger because there was no room in the inn. This was Jesus. This was people who had been forced away from everything that they had by outside forces and found themselves in a small concrete room with a kerosene heater, wrapping a baby in a blanket and laying them in a crate. Because in this case, whoa, there were two. We didn't know that. And I think it's, maybe this gives us a little better picture of how life started for him. There were three seasons in Jesus' life. And like I already briefly talked about, let's go to that next picture. I think it's two ahead. There's the infants, right? When Jesus is born, he's a child. He was a child just like your little newborn, two-year-old, four-year-old, eight-year-old, where life is all about him. And that's okay. And then as he grows up, you see him starting to interact with the world and pushing back at about 12. And then things kind of go silent. And he just did life, right? He interacted with people. He was coming to church and talking and sharing and getting from his parents and pushing back. And there's this exchange of that love and that connection. And then ultimately, he becomes like the father who just gives and loves and cares. You know, it's interesting. Let's do a little experiment here. And we can go ahead and close that out. Go ahead and take out your wallet. And don't worry, I'm not going to make you give me anything. But take out your wallet or open your purse, wherever you keep your cash. Look in there. And if you don't have any cash on you, just arbitrarily think about your bank account. I do this because 70% of the world lives on less than $10 a day. So you, whatever amount you happen to have in cash right now, the majority of the time it's more than $10. Which is an entire day's wage for more than two-thirds of the world's population. How many of you feel ridiculously rich? You are. If you live within 20 miles of this location, you are richer than probably 90 or 95% of the world's population. Probably 95. I'm making that statistic up, but 70% of the world lives on less than $10 a day, which means $300 a month. Over two-thirds of the world lives on less than that. What you have as pocket change is literally all the people around the world have. That should be a sobering thought. Because so often here in the U.S., we worry about how much do we have and what can we get and what can we, you know, how comfortable can we be, and is our kid going to get the Xbox One that they really desperately need for Christmas? And are we going to have a nice enough car? And are we going to be able to go to that nice restaurant or take our wife out on that special thing? Or maybe not that special of a thing. It's just our thing. And yet, all of that is extra. We forget how much we have here. And honestly, I think it is God's challenge to us as the church to grow up and realize we need to be giving and loving more than worrying about ourselves. Now, I'm sure if you've talked to Tom or you've talked with Gail or... Well, there's a handful of people who have gone on trips that have come out of this church with me. There is something tangible when you go and you see that you go, oh, I need to reorient my priorities. I'm going to tell you a story about this couple that I met in Kurdistan. The guy's name is Amir and his wife is Talal. Have that picture of them? And this to me is a story of what grown-up love looks like. So he is a Christian and he was in Baghdad, Iraq. And he got kidnapped by somebody who hated Christians. There again, speaking through an interpreter, it was hard to get all the specific details. But he spent a year and a half in prison. And he showed us the bullet wounds and the marks on him from where he had been beaten and tortured from whatever they wanted, if anything. And never renounced his faith. And got out and fled and went to Kurdistan, Iraq, and was living in it would be like one of those pods structures with some kind of paneling and little windows that UN sets up these little refugee camps, and they're sort of like those pod structures. And as we were talking to him, he was telling me about his brother, who was also a Christian. And his brother's wife was either captured and forced to convert or converted to Islam. And when she did, she took their two-year-old daughter and started selling her to ISIS insurgents. That two-year-old daughter, let's go to the next screen. It's that little girl now. And Talal and Amir took all their savings as refugees and went and bought that girl for $7,000 from their, which is a tremendous amount of money to them, from their sister-in-law, because, well, she was being abused. And they brought her back to live with them in that refugee camp. And he was talking about how they were going to help her grow up and be safe and loved again. And when we were there, he was talking about his brother, the former sister-in-law, also then told, I don't know, whoever it was in Baghdad about her former husband who was a Christian. And he was now in prison being tortured just like Amir had been. And Talal was trying to save money to buy his brother's freedom out of prison. And he was trying to get together about $6,000 because he figured he could do that with that amount of money. And the whole time he was talking about how much he loved God and Jesus loved him, and this is what he was called to do. That to me is a grown-up adult faith. Where he said, I am called to bring and buy freedom for those that are closest to me, even though it costs me everything. It was a beautiful example of grown-up love and faith. One of the ICCM stands for International Child Care Ministries. And I have a little table set up back there, and we can talk about that afterwards. But basically what ICCM does is it goes to places like this. Now, they weren't in Kurdistan when I was there. But they go to places like this where the people have nothing, and literally for $30 a month, you can provide everything that kid needs to begin to grow and thrive. In some places they need food, in some places they need clothing, in some places they need shelter, in some places they need education. And the intentionality of ICCM, we're in about 33 countries around the world sponsoring pretty close to 20,000 kids, fluctuates. But the goal of ICCM is to take a small contribution from us here and transform the lives of people like this. To help those who have nothing. And one of the ministries that I'm really excited about that we are rolling out in Cambodia is through this guy, Philip. We have another picture of him there. Yeah, Cambodia. That's not Philip, that's just one of the kids there. But next picture. That's Philip in the back. And he's our director of ICCM in Cambodia. Those are all kids that have been sponsored that he is helping. Next picture. One of the things that is going on in Cambodia is it is such an impoverished area that literally the parents don't have the funds to raise children. They just cannot feed their children. Now, I haven't been to Cambodia where these are. I was at one point, but that's another story. But I was in India. And Shanette and I, my wife, were walking the streets in India. And as we're walking down through this little marketplace, this little two-year-old, about like that kid in blue there, comes running out and hugs Shanette's leg. And if you know my wife, she's the kind of person that, well, A, never knows a stranger, but also just doesn't care if you're a stranger's kid. So she picks the kid up, and she's tickling him, and he's laughing, and they're sort of sharing this moment. And I wish I had taken a picture of it. I looked all over. I don't have one. But she's holding this kid. And the mom who has this little shop there is watching this and smiling. And the mom walks out and says to our guide something. And he turns to my wife and he says, "The mother wants to know if you guys want to keep her child." And we sort of look at each other, like, you can have back. But we're like, what? And she said, "The mother would really like you to take her child because she can't care for it." How desperate of a situation are you? Where somebody picks up your child and hugs them and you go, that's probably a good enough person to give my child to. So Philip is taking care of children like that in Cambodia. Let's go to the next picture. These are some of them in one of the villages he works in. Next picture. These are students that come for education and food, and then they also, people gifted Bibles to them. So they're all holding little Bibles here. Next picture. This is a grandmother, and the little daughter in the back is being held. The story with that little girl is the grandmother, her daughter was 14, and they were in a village. And some people came, a couple people from one of the big cities. And the mother didn't have any food or any resources and was struggling just to provide for her family. And they said, you know what? Your daughter's 14. If you're willing to let her go, we'll give you a small stipend and we'll take her to the city and we'll provide a good life for her. We'll give her a good job. She'll make money. We'll treat her well. Would you be willing to do that? And the mother went, yeah, okay. So they gave her about $200, $250, which is a year's wage and a little bit more, and took the daughter to the city. A year later, at 15, the daughter came back. She was dressed in really nice clothes. She had jewelry. And she told the village all these stories about how she was being taken care of, and she was making money, and life was good, and whatever. And five more teenage girls went with her back to the city. 2 years later, she came back, having given birth to this little girl, because she had become a sex slave. And gave the little girl to her mother and said, they'll kill her if I keep her. Dropped off the little girl and left. That little girl is now an ICCM child. And Philip has started doing sex trafficking education for the parents. He heard about this story and he said, you know, we need to start talking about what's going on. We need to start letting parents know, yeah, I mean, this sounds good that you get $250 and your child is promised a life, but it's not what they're telling you. And the really cool thing about this, I see Philip as the adult giving God's love. And I see this little girl as the child that's being given love. But I also see these two boys, and I would love to pronounce their names, but I can't. I have them written down, but I would butcher it, and you're not going to remember anyway, so it doesn't matter. But these two boys are graduated ICCM youth that are now in that adolescent phase where they've been given love and they're growing up and learning to give back. And they are helping take care of and protect this little girl so the same thing doesn't happen to her that happened to her mother. And I see in these pictures that growth of love and maturity. And it came about because people like you, like Marcy, and whoever else sponsors kids, said, we're going to help. Oops. And I think this ministry, and a variety of ministries are really near to Jesus' heart. I mean, you look at that picture of Jesus or those babies as refugees. Let's go to the next verse. Matthew 2, 13 to 14. After the wise men were gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, flee to Egypt with the child and his mother, the angel said. Stay there until I tell you to return, because Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. That night, Joseph left for Egypt with the child and Mary, his mother, and they stayed there until Herod's death. This fulfilled what the Lord had spoken through the prophet. I called my son out of Egypt. Do you realize we serve a refugee? You know, when God said in Deuteronomy, take care of those foreigners who are among you, because you were foreigners in Egypt. And then he says later, Jesus says later, whatever you've done to the least of these, you've done to me. I don't think that's hyperbole. I think that's Jesus saying, this actually is me. Like, I was a foreigner. I was a refugee in Egypt. As Christians, the reason we are called to serve and to care for and grow into just loving without reward those who have the least is because that is who God is. He was born into a small backwoods community to parents that were forced out of their home by an occupying power, raised in a barn. Well, that's a stretch, but you know what I mean. Born in a manger, fled as a refugee to a foreign country, and then comes back home and says, now, what you do to the least of these, you do to me. Because that's actually how it works. Which leads us to the place of, how can you help the least of these? If you have your little handouts, I made up a little sheet for you, and I'm going to walk through this. The first thing you can do to actually walk into caring for the least of these is you can give money. And you can do that today at church. You can designate it. If you want to give to me, I'm going to be back, you know, because you guys aren't allowed to leave for at least 5 minutes. I'm going to be back at, at least you would be shamed if you did. But I'm going to be back there. You can come and talk to me. And you can give to a specific project. I didn't talk about all the things that we do, but one of the things that ICCM does is they provide water filters. And for $50, you can provide a permanent water filter for a family. And we not only give them the filter, but then educate them on how to use them and clean them. And literally I was in Kenya this last summer, and we gave out 7 to this village that we were working with. And they have to walk down and get the water about half a mile. We did a walk with them. They fill up a 5-gallon bucket and carry it back on their head 5 to 6 times a day. And it's even at that impure, just water kind of flows into a stream and then into a little pond. And you can give them one of these and they can filter it and prevent dysentery and sickness and all the things with that. So you can give to something like that. There's opportunities to provide gifts of food that are needed. There's animals. You know, if you want to change a family's life, give them a handful of goats or a cow or a bunch of chickens or bunnies or whatever, because rabbits are amazing. They do what rabbits do, and then there's food and pelts to sell. So you can give animals and help. But if you just want to make a one-time gift, that is a great way to just help out. The piece that I challenge people about on this, though, and don't get me wrong, there are people around the world who just need your money. God always works through relationship, though. The gospel is not spread by us writing a check in America and going, well, I helped Jesus out. It happens through relationship and people on the ground. And ICCM very intentionally uses the funds that are given for building those relationships and helping. But I would challenge you, you can maybe even take it a step further, and number two would be, sponsor a child. It's $30 a month, and I'm not going to tell you how few Starbucks cups that is. You have to give up, because that's not the point. The point is that it's an intentionality to beginning to enter a relationship. For $30 a month, you literally get a child, there's a whole mess of them back there, and they have a picture and a name, and you can write them letters, and they can write you letters, and you begin to kind of have a semblance of a relationship. You can literally pull that child out of poverty and provide food or clothing or education or anti-sex trafficking education for their family. And more than just write a check, you get the chance to know a child and interact with them. We'll go to the pictures here. This is what that $30 a month buys. This was in India. I took a team there, well, a couple, three or four times. This is in the Annapurna Hostel. They're eating on banana leaves because, well, nobody has dishes, let alone dishwashers. And so they use banana leaves, which is actually kind of fun, and everybody eats with their hands. That's not weird. If you go on a mission trip to India, you eat with your hands, because that's how the Indian people eat. But this was a group of kids in one of the hostels. Next picture. And this was them singing and praising and having a fun celebration in this hostel. Next picture. And this little guy, I have a poster of him back there. I actually have his name, but there again, I really couldn't pronounce it. If you want to know, you can come and look. It's written down right here. It's Rajanith Kumar Krishnan something, the Annapurna Hostel. We just showed up, and actually I wasn't even with ICCM at this point. We were just in India doing a mission trip, and we went to one of our Free Methodist hostels. And he came running up to me with this letter and a picture of a family that sponsors him. And he was like, I was taking pictures because that's what I do. And he's like, take a picture of me with the people that sponsor me. And he was so excited to tell me about these Americans that had written him this letter that he couldn't even read, and the picture of their family, and was just so grateful for what he'd been blessed with, this relationship, that he was telling the random Americans that showed up, because of course all Americans know each other, about this family. It's more than a check. It's the beginning of a relationship. Next one. So that is an option to sponsor a child. And I would actually say as a church as well, I think somebody, Marcy, were you saying you as a church collectively sponsor one child? That is amazing. And various churches around the Oregon Conference do that. Salem First, they have a Sunday school group that sponsors three children. Living Hope down in Eugene, go to the next one. Okay, we'll get to Living Hope in a sec. I told them I do things out of order. But so the third thing I would challenge you to do to actually begin to step out in a relationship is actually go on a mission trip and see people that are in need or that are being helped. Go to the pictures here. Some of you might recognize these people. This is at that Annapurna hostel in India. Next picture. This was in the Dominican Republic. That's the back of Tom's head. Yeah. I don't see Kathy here today, but that's her waving her white hanky. Gail is doing Gail. Next picture. And this was us working with a church and painting. Next picture. And the church we were painting there. Next one. This was this last summer. April doing April. Yes. Next one. And us saying goodbye to the Dominican Republic. And incidentally, July. For General Conference, we're doing mission trips to four different locations. We're going to Dominican Republic again. We're going to Haiti. We're going to Togo in Africa. And we're going to inner city Miami as Free Methodist Conference in the U.S. And so you can look up information on that. Go ahead and I think I have a... Yeah, you can look up those links, and it's also in this little piece of paper for you. If you're at all interested in going, it's a great way to begin doing relationship. And if you're somebody who is at a place you're like, man, I just can't do that, or I don't feel called to that, you can send somebody who is. This is one of the challenges that I give to churches. There is a big difference between letting somebody go from your church on a mission trip and sending somebody on a mission trip. We are called as churches to send people. I would love it if, you know, all of you showed up in the Dominican Republic next summer. Probably not going to happen. I'm just playing the odds. But I know that some of you will. And I know that the rest of you can support and send them. Sure, with money, but through prayer, through encouragement, through lifting that, through when they come back, hearing their stories and letting their experiences speak to your heart and stretch you and stretch your understanding. And maybe one of the things that'll happen, that's where we're going. Haiti, Dominican Republic, Togo, Miami. And I have some information back there on those if you need more. Or you can bug Gail about it. Next. And here's a cool thing. This is where I said I got my slides out of order, or at least my speaking out of order of my slides. Some of you may recognize Dave Lindner on the far left. He was a pastor of Living Hope Church down in Eugene. And that's Sarah Lindner, his daughter, who's now pastoring at Centennial Church down in Springfield. And that's Robin and Stacy. They go to Living Hope Church. And we went to India together in one of the trips. Next picture. And we went and visited this ICCM hostel. This was a brand new hostel. We were in a different part of India there. Again, I could not pronounce the name. This is like forever long. It's not Annapurna. It's like blah, 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 blah. But there were, at the time, 14 girls that were in this hostel, and only one of them had an ICCM sponsor. Next picture. And Stacy and Sarah had a lot of fun and really connected with these girls. And they came back. Do I have one more picture? Where does it go to the words? Okay, we'll leave it here. Yeah. So they came back from that trip, and they presented to their church and said, this is what we're doing. This is what we saw. This is what's happening. We need to help. And Living Hope Church came together, and there are about 70 people. And they came together as a church, and they said, you know what? We feel connected to this place that we've been on mission to, and we are going to sponsor that entire hostel. And so ICCM, we call it a connected community, ICCM sent them the profiles of all those kids, and the kids were adopted by the church, people in the church, and then any that weren't adopted by individuals, the church picked up the bill for. And so I think of the 14 or 15 girls that were there at the time, 12 of them were sponsored by individuals in the church, and then the church covered three more. And that church now takes responsibility for that hostel. And they get to go back on mission and see their girls. And those girls get to know their church in America that's watching out for them. And it's a whole nother step of relationship that's taking place. This might be something you guys would think about as well. And there's opportunities to do that all over the world. So that is one of the amazing things that comes out of going on a mission trip. In closing, I would remind you of Matthew 5, 23 and 24. So if you're presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. And come and offer your sacrifice to God. We're in the season of Advent. We're celebrating our little displaced refugee, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We're talking about the season of love. Where have you been in that season with your faith? Have you been a child just taking love? We've been an adolescent that's giving and taking, you know, helping out here and also getting? Or have you moved into Christian maturity where you are giving and taking care of the least of these? Maybe Jesus has another step in growing up for you. I don't know what that is. But I would challenge you, if God has poked your heart, put something on it, don't ignore that. Not for my sake, for yours. You could literally change a life. So as I close, you have that sheet of options. And I have a video about 4 minutes long of faces of refugees that I took while we were in Kurdistan. It's just set to music. But I would just challenge you, ask God, what have you got for me? How can I grow? How can I love you and serve you? It's just a time of reflection.